You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Knox foul from behind. Count it and one. As Tristan pumps his fist.
What he does is contagious.
Hardaway to Trier. Trier drives down. Alonzo Trier. Baker launches a three-pointer across the lane to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Fatrick Ewing. You may know me as NBA Injury Report on Twitter. And this is episode 364. Woo-wee! On today's show, I'm joined by the wonderful Alex Wolf. And we are doing a voicemail bag. It's historic. I've never had on a guest while doing a voicemail bag. But that ends today. If you want to get in on a future voicemail bag, call us at 929-377-5103. For today, we're going to answer questions about where Frank would go if we redrafted the 2017 draft, what kind of offense the Knicks are running, how to get defense into the second unit. Some monster asked if Walt Clyde Frazier was a curse on the Knicks. We're going to let him hear it. And then we're going to check in with one of our favorite callers, Larry the Athlete, who wants to talk a little bit about how much he loves Frank Ntilikina. It's a good show. I think you're going to like it. Hit it, Marv!
Yes!
Hey, yo, what's up? What's up? It's your boy, Fernando, from Seattle. I got a question. People talk shit about Frank Ntilikina all the time, but most people from the 2017 draft have been struggling. If you could do a redraft of that draft, would Frank Ntilikina still be in his position, or would he go higher? Deuces.
All right, Alex, this is our first joint voicemail bag. There's a couple of logistic hurdles to overcome, but I think we can do it. We just heard the first voicemail from, I already forget the guy's name, Fernando?
Fernando from Seattle. Come on, James, get on top of your shit.
I know. But he basically is asking, if we did the 2017 draft over again, where would Frank go? Would he go a little higher, is what he said. Maybe he'll go a little lower. I don't know. What do you think? He originally went 8. Of course, you guys remember this because you're Knicks fans. Frank Ntilikina went 8 overall in the 2017 draft. Where would he go if they drafted today? I think it's safe to say if we started at the top, we've got some combination of Donovan Mitchell and Jason Tatum. Do you think that's a controversial stance?
No, not at all. And I don't care enough to parse between those two to figure out who would go 1, who would go 2, but they would be 1-2, like, no doubt.
I would personally go Donovan Mitchell 1 and Jason Tatum 2, but obviously a case can be made for either of these guys. Clearly they're at the top.
Yeah, no doubt. Like, they're the top two guys. Like, that's no question. So that means that Frank would have to supplant at least 2 more guys in the top 7 to get higher than where he was drafted, because one guy already jumped him. So,
yeah,
something to keep in mind.
Yes. Ooh, I have my list that I'm looking at of how I would draft or what I think is reasonable, and I wouldn't have had that information handy. So thank you for providing value, Alex.
I come prepared, you know. Remember last time I had, like, medical information off the top of my head? Today I have, you know, some math knowledge off the top of my head. Just call me Drew Steele.
Who's coming up next for you in this redraft?
See, this is actually, no, you know what? This is easy. It's De'Aaron Fox, because De'Aaron Fox is balling out this year so far. So it's definitely De'Aaron Fox.
That's who I have as number 3. Bonus, he was picked by Scott Perry, which makes our brain trust look even smarter than it does after this earth-shattering, shaking draft that he just had. But yeah, De'Aaron Fox looks great. He just had his first triple-double. I think it was last week. He's quick as hell. He looks to have the makings of... This is such an awkwardly phrased sentence. He looks to have the makings of being an excellent point guard. It's probably the ugliest thing I've ever said. But yeah, and which is obviously a hugely important position in today's NBA. So I feel very comfortable putting him at number three there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. He's like for sure, I think, far and away number three now, just based off how he's played so far to start this year. So
again, love Frank, but I think it's reasonable to say those three guys go first, no matter who's drafting.
Yep. So four is where it's going to start to get a little more dicey, I think.
Starts getting dicier. I agree. I mean, I'll just throw this out there. Is Lauri Markkanen better than Frank Ntilikina?
I would argue yes, like after, like at this point, you know, it's difficult to say because he's been hurt for what, like this whole year so far, right? He hasn't played a game yet?
Yeah, I believe that's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, dude, you look at his stats from last year, he was pretty good, you know?
He was excellent. Offensively, defensively challenged.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I think he's fixable on defense, you know? I don't think, he's never going to be like Porzingis, but
no.
I think he could be a good enough, like, team defender.
Yeah.
So, you know, and 15 points, 8 boards almost, like, I don't know. I think he's definitely your fourth guy.
He can shoot. He can take you up the dribble when you close out on him. He's dangerous, and he's aggressive, and he looks like he knows he belongs. He's got a real punchable face, but I got to give it up for him. The kid can play basketball. I think, you know, most people would take Lauri Markkanen over Frank. Now is where I think it gets even dicier. Are you saying, is Kuzma better than Frank?
Yeah, you know, Kuzma is like another one of those weird wild cards too. And I was going to say Kuzma's teammate, Lonzo, also.
They're up there. They're kind of who I have in the next tier, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. It's tough. And you know what? There's even some other ones too that you know, are potential movers, even though, because Frank, like, the biggest thing is you're weighing his untapped potential.
Yeah.
Because, like, on paper, Frank really has been kind of shitty so far. Like, as far as just, like, pure numbers go. You know, and, like...
Well, yeah, offensively, like, efficiency-wise, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, it hasn't been too pretty. So you're kind of parsing through, I think, some of the potential guys. Like, there's even, like, Adebayo from Miami, who looks pretty promising.
I have him significantly farther down, but I do hear you on that. I don't think people are taking Adebayo over Ntilikina.
But there's John Collins also from Atlanta. He looked really good for his rookie year. I'm not saying necessarily that this is the direction I'm going, but it's hard. It's hard to figure it out. I do think I would probably put Lonzo next.
Okay.
Just because I would probably put Lonzo as my... We're up to five now. I would put Lonzo as the fifth. I think he's pretty safely there. Like, he's shown enough so far, I think.
His shooting has improved this year. He's a big guard like Frank. His defense is pretty good. It's not Frank's level, but it's pretty good.
And things have been a little weird for him, getting used to LeBron and whatever. He's playing less minutes, that sort of thing. But I do think that he has better defense than was advertised when he was coming out of college, and I think his offense is higher at a higher level than Frank's right now.
I think that's right. Him and Kuzma's scoring more and scoring more efficiently, I believe, this year. Like, he's also, I was looking at his numbers earlier.
Well, I feel like
his defense is terrible though.
Whew. He's scoring 19 points a game this year so far. Dude. I didn't realize he was scoring that much. Yeah. Holy shnikes. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's still kind of splitting hairs between those two, though, because, like, Lonzo can definitely do more things all around, but Kuzma, clearly, better scorer, I think.
I'm such a Frank stan that I'm ready to be like, I want him at five. You know, but I also, if I'm thinking about what the league would do, I don't know that they would put him there. I do think it's reasonable to think both Kuzma and Ball are ahead of him.
Yeah.
And that would put Frank at seven, you know, at the most. I would like him. I think he's like a more fully realized what Jonathan Isaac is like supposed to be. Because I feel like Frank's this kind of like switch everything defensive guy who's more, you know, starting as a one. whereas Isaac's like starting as a wing and can like maybe, you know, play up to the five perhaps, like against smaller dudes. But like he's not as realized on defense as Frank is, and I think is also still very raw offensively. So that to me is the player that becomes the biggest sort of toss up. I'm not a Dennis Smith Jr. fan. I don't know what's going on with Josh Jackson. You know, like, so that to me it feels reasonable to say that Frank could go seven. I don't think he goes below eight. Like maybe someone still really likes Dennis Smith Jr. because he can jump high and has like highlight reel dunks sometimes, but I don't know. I don't think.
Yeah, it gets real dicey. Like it's tough to put yourself in the shoes of like quote unquote the league. You know what I mean? Like to play like random GM X. You know, like but I think I think he would go. Well, so are we assuming that this the same draft order?
Well, that's the thing. You could get into like super deep detail and do a 15-part podcast on each team's motivations and getting into, you know, this alternate reality, blah, blah, blah. For our purposes, I think it's roughly just kind of thinking about what these guys have showed so far and what we think their potential is and not really trying to match it to team motivations. That's an extra layer of BS that I'm not quite willing to dive into for this question, because we do need to get to other questions too.
Well, here's what I'm settling on. Yeah. Fuck it. This is a Knicks podcast. We love Frank. Yeah, he moves up one spot. I'm moving him up one spot to number seven.
I concur. Next question. In just a moment, we're going to get to that next question, and we're going to talk about what sort of offense the Knicks are running this year. But before we do that, I need to tell you about something that's very important to me, and that is attending live events. If you've listened to the show, you know that I've attended every Billy Joel show at Madison Square Garden, and that's because one's better than the next. You never know what's going to happen at a live show. The thrill of the unknown is a big draw to attending live events, so it's just communion and fellowship with your fellow Joel heads, you know what I'm saying? But there's only one problem. You gotta get there. You gotta get tickets, and I've got a solution for you that you're gonna love. It's called Vivid Seats. It's an app. We all know apps make everything better. They make it much easier. Get Vivid Seats. Use the code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $20 off your first purchase of $200 or more, and that's for Billy Joel concerts, Carly Simon concerts, Knicks games, Hamilton, you know, the best rap that's ever been recorded, Hamilton, you know that, right? You can get all those tickets anywhere you want, 100% guaranteed, using Vivid Seats. Just use the code LOCKEDON and you will get $20 off your first purchase of $200 or more. Once again, that's Vivid Seats.
Hey, James, this is Jose from California, a huge Knicks fan since 1992. I just want you to explain to somebody, a simple fan like me, what kind of offense they're running, because it seems like we're getting this fake motion offense that we're just doing dribble handoffs around the three-point line, and we never get any kind of action or cuts. Can you please explain to our simple fan like us what kind of offense Fizdale is running? Seems that it's causing kind of a problem towards the end of the in the fourth quarter. That's why we're not able to close out games. Thanks.
All right. So the question is, what sort of offense are the Knicks running? Now, it has looked pretty sloppy at times. The fourth quarter has seen some struggles. And I know I've thought, what the hell is going on out there? It doesn't look super structured, but I can tell you some things that I see. I don't know a name for it. I don't know if you would call this a motion offense yet. I would say what we've seen so far, the answer is no. It's not the triangle, but I can identify some actions. I see a lot of dribble handoffs. I see, right? I see a lot of that double drag screen play that they've been running. A couple people have done some nice video work breaking that down. I see a lot of sort of like Dotson and Hardaway, maybe Burke, they come off these curls for sort of like mid-range shots at the stripe. I see a lot of isolations for Trier and Hardaway, though I think to the Knicks' credit, they're trying to get them kind of into mismatches first. Or, you know, if they have a guy on them they think they could cook, like the other night, Fizdale was just telling Trier, whatever you want, you know? I don't think it's just like a... I don't think it's a perma green light, but I do think they're trying to give them that green light when they see a favorable matchup. I see Enes Kanter being given a lot of opportunities to post up. And that's sort of the majority, I would say, of what I'm seeing out of Fizdale so far. Do you think I'm missing anything big?
Just two other little things other than what you said, unless it was in the jumble there and I just missed it. One thing that I've noticed a little bit more lately, and hopefully it's something that they're working on, is like baseline cuts from like the corners, like getting guys like wings like Trier or Hardaway or whatever running cuts like just straight down the baseline in situations where, you know, that opens up for them, which has been nice to see. Trier in particular is pretty fond of the baseline, it seems like, because he's got a really good reverse.
And there's relatedly, there have actually been a couple of nice sets where Kanter has the ball on the elbow and finds like a cutting Hazonia. That happened a couple times the other night. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of that like kind of post action, which was very nice to see because, you know, Kanter doesn't pass that much historically.
Yep.
You know. And then one more thing you said?
Yeah, the other thing that I've been thinking of, and I mean, I don't have a specific like name or basketball term for it, but I've just noticed that they've been prioritizing, it seems like, getting the like nominal power forward, usually Vonleh, out to the 3-point line, which I think is pretty encouraging for when Porzingis gets back, especially considering like when he gets back this year, we're still going to have Kanter. He's probably going to share the court with him a lot again. Mm-hmm. They seem to be and it's once that's Porzingis instead of Vonleh, I think the Knicks are going to have a lot easier time getting looks inside. Like, the biggest problem with Kanter and Vonleh out there right now is that, like, even if Vonleh pops out the three, he's not a great three-point shooter. Like, he's really – clearly he's trying, and props to him, but he's not a great three-point shooter. And I don't think he's going to become one overnight. But once Porzingis is out there and Porzingis can, like, seriously make you pay out there
– yeah, for sure.
Teams aren't going to be able to kind of stack the paint anymore.
You could run a pick and roll with Kanter or Vonleh and then kick out to Porzingis. Hopefully Kanter doesn't then just crash the boards and make it impossible for Porzingis to drive if he so chooses. But that's another,
precisely.
That's another topic for another question. So, you know, it's here's what I'll say about this offense, which has been justifiably frustrating to some fans. I think there are a number of reasons to be optimistic about Fizdale's offensive acumen. And the first one is that it's still very early in the season with a bunch of new players. A lot of new players. If you don't see the offense getting more sophisticated in the coming weeks, you know, I think that's more of a cause to be concerned. But you have to establish these sort of basic sets before you establish all the counters and, you know, various ways that you can alter the play, break the play off. It's like offense is very complicated, and you're going to start from a real basic point if you have so many new players. And this also can't be understated. Like, the talent level isn't there. They're never going to be a contending team with this roster of these players in this point in their development, right? So what we're seeing might not even be what's being taught. They might be breaking plays constantly. That sort of thing is very difficult to really suss out. You know, they have trouble when Hardaway or Trier aren't playing or aren't playing well because they don't have a lot of guys who can break down a defense. And most offenses rely pretty heavily on someone who can get penetration, who can get into the paint. You know, apologies to the ongoing Free Frank initiative, but on most nights he's not consistently breaking down the defense. So they could have things that they want to do, but not just have the personnel for them. And I also think, you know, right now, if you look at the numbers, they're 20th in the league in points per 100. They're scoring 106.9 points per 100 possessions. And I think they're worse than the 20th team in the league by their talent. So if they're getting 20th in the league, which isn't good, but if they're getting 20th in the league production out of this talent, which I think isn't quite up to that level, like, I think Fizdale's doing okay, like, maximizing his group. You know, a lot of what I'm saying is sort of, like, rose-colored glasses version of things, but even like the couple of wrinkles that you just mentioned when I brought up my initial list, I think shows that he is folding in things. You know, again, like they're not good, so there's a good chance that they might only get some of these more advanced actions like once or twice in a game. You might miss it. You see the bulk of like Cantor posting up or Hardaway taking his guy off the dribble over and over again or Hazonia launching a dumb three. But there's so many variables going on between how young they are, how early it is, and all these other things that I don't think, even though it's looked disjointed, that there's really cause to worry about Fizdale being a poor offensive mind.
Yeah, no, I concur. It's basically like, in summary, to like TLDR what you just said.
How dare you? That could never be said in fewer words. That was the most concise thing. That was the most concise point that's ever been made on a podcast, in the written word, any kind of medium.
So, again, to TLDR that, basically, young team, almost like half the roster wasn't here last year, plus you have a new coach. So even the players that were here last year or before that, you know, it's all new for them as well.
Yeah,
so
true.
It's, and we're 10 games into an 80 or 11, whatever games into an 82 game season. So it's a waiting game, but like you said, like if we hit maybe like the Christmas game and by then we're not already seeing like some more cohesive looking offense consistently, then maybe it's time to like worry just a tiny bit, but most of the season's going to be a mulligan anyway.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it feels like. So I'm not too worried about it. And I think there's definitely, you know, just based off what you and I just said, there's definitely some baseline for like a cohesive offense here, I think.
I concur with your TLDR. Next question.
Hey, James. Adam L. here again from Hastings-on-Hudson. What can the second unit be that doesn't just absolutely stink defensively? You know, if you're going to have Burke or Moutier, actually, along with Hazonia and Cantor as the second unit, what are you possibly doing to make anything better and to make anything work? You know, maybe you put Knox as the starting four so that you've got, you know, with Dotson at the three, so you can put Vonleh in the second unit and Mario as the three, or he just doesn't play. Anyway, all right, peace.
All right, so assuming the starting lineup is Frank, Tim, Dotson, Vonleh, Robinson, how do you get some defense in that second unit? Do you have any thoughts on this question, Alex?
My answer is a trick answer because I don't know. The reality is that I think Fizdale, first off, has put his money where his mouth is as far as valuing good defenders, because he's definitely put some of his best defenders in the starting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue he's put almost every one of his best defenders outside of maybe Trier. Trier has definitely shown some defensive chops that we didn't necessarily know were there. I think the answer to this is just staggering people. And I think he's done an okay job of doing that.
Yeah.
You know, like making the subs of, you know, taking out Robinson first, putting Cantor in, leave him out there with Vonleh still. You know, take out Tim, put in Trier kind of thing. Take out Frank, put in Moutier, whatever, but make sure that he has Trier there to kind of cover for him a little bit. I mean, I think it's just, it's all about staggering. Like, because the reality is that you're only going to have so many good defenders on any given team. And like I just said, like, Fizdale is starting pretty much all of them. So it makes it kind of difficult then to, like, find defense somewhere else on your bench with a bunch of guys that have shown they can't really play it.
Yeah, I really agree. Very few coaches do that hockey substitution, you know, where you sub in an entire unit. Usually that's like a punishment. Like, get out, starters, you disgust me.
or a garbage time thing,
right.
Or an NBA 2K thing. NBA 2K does that all the time. Every time I'm playing that damn game, it's like they sub in your whole second unit all at once. And I'm like, I just want one starter still out there.
You just got to adjust the sliders, my man. Sounds like you need to get more familiar.
I got to get more in depth with it, but I'm like too lazy to go in and set my rotations and all that crap. I'm not into it. You know what I'm saying? I just want to play some basketball.
I know what you're saying, but that's what you get when you buy the world's most robust basketball simulation. I'm just saying. It's endlessly customizable and a delight for kids aged 9 to 99. Continuing talking about Fizdale, you know, yeah, he staggers guys. I think that helps balance the lineups as much as you can do that, you know, but it also keeps guys fresh. This is interesting because I think it feeds into actually the last question. I think that's sneakily one of the reasons why the Knicks have struggled on offense early on, because there are so many different looks. Like, it's tough for them to get comfortable because they're always in different lineups playing with different guys. And, you know, when you play with a different guy, even just, like, in the rec league or, like, after school with your friends or whatever, if you're not used to their tendencies, it can be a little bit more difficult. You don't know when the guy's going to cut. They should have a system, and that should help, and blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is, it is more difficult when you're playing in, like, all these different combinations. And I don't think that's wrong that he's doing that. I actually think the ideal is to be able to do that, because you can mix and match depending on what other teams do. But I do think it makes it a little bit harder to get out of the gate in a year like this one. But overall, I would say the answer to this question almost doesn't matter, because I really do think, like, this year is all about establishing the culture, rewarding guys, like you said, who are playing good defense. We have said we will do this as an organization forever. And we, because I am a Knick, never do this. And it's really refreshing to see them giving the defenders time in the starting lineup. And quite frankly, I think they realize this. Like, our goal should be to secretly tank a little bit. Like, this is the last season. Like, I do really strongly believe that. I don't think there's so much of a difference between where they are and what record would really help them secure a top pick. And because they're so close to, like, just being one of the worst teams anyway, if they can sort of, like, do that without people really realizing, without players thinking they're... you know, throwing the game, like, I think they would be smart to do that. And there's hundreds of millions of dollars on the line here when you talk about building a successful franchise, billions of dollars if you're selling it. And when that much money's on the line, people aren't, like, sticking their head up their ass and pretending they're living in some, like, comic book fantasy world for children where... where you don't...
You had to throw that in there, huh?
I didn't even plan that part of the rant. That just came out naturally. But, like, these guys are going to be cutthroat and brutal and do everything they can to succeed. It's how they got to where they are. Like, Scott Perry's a nice teddy bear, but I bet you he'd slit your throat if he thought it would help the Knicks do better and help him, you know, advance the position of his franchise. I don't think they're above that. I really don't. And they're never going to say that they're doing it on purpose. But Fizdale, I'm not, you know, his, like, I'm putting guys out of their comfort zone. I'm telling you, it's the ultimate catch-all for doing whatever the fuck you want. You know, doing weird decisions that cost you the game. We've already seen them say this a couple times. And I don't think I'm wearing a tinfoil hat right now. I think they understand this. I think they're smart. You watched that Duke game the other day. They got three monsters on that team. Who knows who else is out there? I want Zion Williams. I want his thick, beefy dunks on the New York Knicks. And the second lineup having no defense might, in fact, help that goal. Next question!
Sorry, I just can't... I can't stop imagining Scott Perry murdering someone in their sleep to win the Knicks an extra five games.
He wouldn't do it this year, but he will do it in a championship-contending season. You bet your butt.
I can't wait. I cannot wait.
I'm sorry for screaming next question when you still had a thought, Alex. Do you have anything to add to this before we next question? This question?
No, now we can next question.
Do you want to hit him?
I just had to mention that.
Hit him with it.
Next question.
Hey, this is Neil, the Knicks fan from Maine. I know I'm going to get a lot of shade for this, but you told us to complain and explain. And I just want to point this out, that I think Clyde may be a curse, okay? Hear me out. We haven't won since he did. He's also getting a little old. I think it's time for him to go. You pointed out him saying some things that Mike Breen has to quickly correct him on. And if you just look at how he talks about the Knicks while they play compared to other announcers, he does not hesitate to crap on the Knicks a little bit. He does not hesitate to say that the Knicks were wrong about this, and I don't know. You listen to other teams' announcers, and it's sort of this ignorant, complete bias that you hate listening to when you're the away team. So I would sort of like it if our announcers, no matter what the Knicks did, it was like the Knicks are always right. I know I'm going to get a lot of shade for this. I know people love Clyde, but, I mean, my wife can't even watch the games because of all these crazy words he says. It's ridiculous. It drives her mad. I don't think he's really ever on board with our team. I think he is the curse keeping the Knicks where they are. Clyde's got to go. Bring the shade.
So Neil, the alleged Knicks fan from Maine, says that Walt says that Walt Clyde Frazier is a curse on the Knicks. Do you agree, Alex?
No, no. What is wrong with him? Dude, did he eat a bad lobster or something? Then come on.
The Maine shade. First off,
he leads with, I need to complain and explain. That is a clear Clydeism, and he's using it to shit on Clyde, and that is not okay.
It's, all right? Yeah, maybe he's pissed that their beaches are all rocks, and they don't have sand up there.
It's true, it is true.
They're so cold. You can go swimming for like 3 minutes, August 28th, and that's the only
exactly.
time.
Secondly, he says that Clyde is crapping on the Knicks. He just holds them accountable when they suck. He says they suck. I would prefer that he do that rather than like, you know, Enes Kanter blows a defensive rotation and he's like, oh, well, that's okay. Like, no, not at all. I want Clyde to tell me when they suck because it's good to know. Like, Clyde's a smart freaking dude. He knows how to play basketball. No, holding them accountable is not crapping on them. And I'm sorry that you want some shitty like Celtics announcer that just is like constantly. You know,
handing out Tommy points.
Yeah, I was going to say there's like a million different things that come to mind, but I'm not going to say because I'm going to try to stay appropriate. But like, yeah,
Boston fans racist. Yeah, the whole city's racist.
No, I was going more in the sexual direction.
We'll leave that alone. Don't know what that's about. Here's what I want to say to Neil. Neil, you are you're teetering on the edge of a lifetime ban with this call. But I do like to think of this podcast as a festival of ideas. It's been called that by the New Yorker. They actually said we almost canceled our festival of ideas because James does such a good job of hosting one every night on Locked On Knicks. So I will briefly allow this blasphemy. Clyde does occasionally sound out of date with like some of his basketball ideas. He's made a couple weird comments about like women being fans that don't understand. I'm going to chalk that up to a weird slip of the tongue and he didn't mean it. I don't know. But, like you said, Alex, there's no problem with him being critical of his team. He's obviously a true legend. The fact that his wife doesn't want to watch the games because of Clyde tells me, I don't say this lightly, but you should get a divorce, Neil. And it's obviously true that Dolan has cursed this team for the past 20 years. We're starting to dig our way out from under it. You know, I don't, like, know why Dolan's curse is losing its power, but it seems to be. But yeah, it's, you know, let me know. Let me know if you guys agree, if you think Clyde's a curse. Tweet at me and don't dox Neil. Do me a favor. You know, no one deserves that.
How the hell would they dox him? How many freaking Neils do you think there are in Maine? There's definitely like thousands.
Probably. I bet 90% of the guys in Maine are named Neil, if I had to guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So nobody's going to dox him. If anybody does that, they're worse than Neil for saying that Clyde is bad.
Here's what I'm going to do. I always say at the end of the podcast, be chill to each other. So you got to put that to the test. If your values don't stand up under the most extreme conditions, they're not really your values. So I will say this to you, Neil. I love you. I don't love everything you do. My mom used to say that to me. And you made a big mistake. You made a big mistake here today. But you're a human being, and I'm sure you've got a rich inner life that's not all as dark and disgusting as what you've shown us on this episode.
Yeah, Neil, you're not a bad person. You just sometimes do bad things.
You did a
like
very
saying
bad thing.
That Clyde is a curse.
He did
which
a bad,
is blasphemy.
Bad thing. Next question.
James Michael again. Lance Thomas, my third guy that you're always complaining about. I don't get it. The dude's like solid. He's one of the best defenders on the team. He's a hustler. He's a veteran. He works his ass off, which is the perfect person to have around the young talent. I don't like the idea of wanting to get rid of him. I like the idea of having that kind of guy around. Anyway, man, ciao.
All right, Alex, do I give Lance Thomas too much shit? What do you think?
I think you give him an appropriate amount of shit.
Appropriate amount.
That's just me. I mean, dude, I can appreciate where... Shit, now I forgot the caller's name. Do you remember his name?
No.
I'm an asshole. Damn it.
I'm great with faces, not with names.
So. I know. I'm the same exact way. You and me, visual learners. But anyway, the caller, whose name I forget. Sorry, caller. He has a point that Lance definitely seems like a good veteran presence. However, he is just not a very good NBA basketball player. So most of your animus towards him came when he was in the starting lineup, which was just, in retrospect, sort of absurd given the fact that he has a hard time cracking 5 minutes now. Yeah. So
that's all. I will say, in fairness to this caller, this was an older voicemail, so it probably was around the time when I was complaining a little bit about him starting. Although I did say, it's fine for now. You know, I didn't lose my shit or anything. The current Lance Thomas barely playing at all situation is one that is totally fine with me. And, you know, if they want to keep him around for $1 million or whatever going forward, like, that's fine too. He should just be a break in case of emergency sort of guy. Break glass, excuse me, in case of emergency sort of guy. I think, did we cover that one?
Yep. Next question.
Oh, Larry the Athlete here on the phone. Alexander Graham Bell. Boom. Anyway, let me first start off by saying whether you were asking whether I love or hate you after last call. It's love, baby. It's always love. Larry loves. That's all you need to know. Larry loves. Speaking of love, there's no greater love than a parent could have for a child. It's just, it's innate. And me, myself, Larry, I'm too focused on athletics to ever have a child of my own. So the closest thing I have to a child is my sweet baby boy, Frank Ntilikina. Two nights ago, my baby boy, he started at point guard. And I am so proud because he was able to defend Steph Curry. He was running the pick and roll. He was shooting and hitting threes. He's all grown up. My baby's all grown up. I'm so proud. I'm crying. That's how he feels. And, you know, sometimes with Frank, I feel like one of those suburban parents who get mad at the little league coach for not putting their kid in the game, or the high school coach, and they just yell at the coach from the stands. When Fizdale didn't put my boy, bring Ntilikina back in the game, I was that suburban parent. Put him back in! Frank is the point guard of the future. Ugh, I can't be mad at you, Fizz, because Larry loves. It's okay. Larry loves. All right, I got a rec hockey league game. Gretzky! I got to go to it, so I'll talk to you next time, James. Power play!
this guy's good. I gotta. I've never enjoyed getting roasted as thoroughly.
Oh my god!
This guy's really
dude. All right, Kevin Love's brother, Larry Love. He gets all my recs to use a PNT reference. All of my recommendations on this one. That was a phenomenal phone call.
Fuck you, Larry. Yeah, right. You love me. Love this, Larry. I'm grabbing my crotch right now. Like a true Staten Island Guido.
Dude, he does such a perfect James.
It's pretty good. Should we let him just do the show instead of me? Should I just quit and let him do it?
Yeah, honestly, this guy you should call up and get as a guest, man. You gotta trace that phone number back.
I do. It makes me feel good about the job I'm doing here, that we get calls like that. I just gotta say, he's gonna tell you this is just who he is, but it's his little bit. It's his little bit. We know this. It's all right.
That was very much a call that embodies that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, because that was like spot on of like funny, emotional, whatever, James. Like when you get all fired up, you know, about stuff. And and going crazy and talking about shit and like having one of your moments. It was very much, he encapsulated that and turned it up to 11. That was very good.
Like, I love this guy. I could also see, if I met him in person, him like maybe punching me in the face. There's a part of me that's like, he hates me.
Him punching you or you punching him?
Him punching me. Yeah.
Why would I punch you?
There's like a two, like, clearly it's loving, but there's a 2% part of me that's like, he might just hate me, like, all the way hate me, but.
I don't know. He called himself Larry Love because he loves you.
He did. I'm going to.
He said that times.
It makes me laugh a lot. So, Larry, keep calling up, whether you love or hate me. You know, you say it's love. We'll see. God will be the judge. God,
who... I would tend to believe Larry. I think he loves you. I think he loves you deeply.
Well, here's what I want to say. I love you, Larry, whether or not you hate me. And I love all our listeners. And I love our guests. Alex, thank you so much for joining us on this first ever dual host or voicemail bag, whatever you want to call it, you know? Woo.
That was a hell of a note to end on.
Right?
It was a true adventure.
It really was.
An adventure of biblical proportions.
I would say so. Why don't you let the people know where they can find you online? If there's anything you want to plug, do that right now.
All right. So I write for Posting and Toasting, SB Nation's New York Knicks blog. You can find me online at the Alex Wolf on Twitter. That's AlexWolfe.
Yes.
You can also find me just on at PT Knicks blog, which I started tweeting off there, and they have 10 times more followers than I do.
True.
So fuck my account. I'm going to tweet off there for most of the time now.
Yeah, Nielsen. The Nielsen people actually said it's the fastest growing Twitter account on Twitter right now.
It's doing pretty good. I think I took over, what, like 2-3 weeks ago, and we've gotten like 200-something new followers. So it's not doing too bad.
Are you close to 10,000 followers?
Not quite. I think we're at 8,500.
Okay.
So, wait, does that mean, like, does my reach become bigger on the Locked On Knicks network now that everybody, like, can be like, oh, that's, like, a legit, like, account? So maybe my 5-follower bump will become, like, a 200-follower bump.
Do you think you're going to do, like, a video when you get to 10,000 followers?
Thanking
everyone and, like, crying a bunch?
That'll probably be nice. I don't know if I'm going to do that, though.
Okay.
I don't know if I can quite feel that attachment since I took over when it already had, like, 8,300 followers.
Okay. So you're not going to make a video where you thank everyone when you get to 10,000? No.
I'm thinking no. Okay. I'm leaning towards no right now. That's not really in the cards.
I think that's reasonable. I think most people would just expect you to keep going, right?
Yeah. I mean, if I do something like that, would you want to be in a video with me?
I would love to.
You think I could get Drew to do it? You think I could get Scooter in there?
I think so. He's
Scooter loves attention. He would totally be all about that.
He's desperate. He's so desperate for attention. It's even more desperate than me. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think we're good. Thanks, Alex.
You got it, James. Bye.
All right, that's it. I want to thank you guys so much for listening to this edition of Locked On Knicks. If you've got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show. If you have not already, and you subscribe to the show, you get it as soon as it's released. You don't have to wait for me to tweet about it. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. If you help us grow, we'll have a better show. Simple as that. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks for bonus takes and general camaraderie. Or follow me at NBA Injury Report for jokes and jokes and jokes about basketball. Be chill to each other. Spray it new to your pets. Not spray. Spay. Spaying new to your pets. You can spray them with a little water vinegar mixture if they're being bad. This works on cats. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Only salt the pasta water. Take that. Data. Biggie's better than Pac. Peace.